WML News at 7. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. Immunocompromised Virginians could start getting COVID booster vaccines as early as today, according to the State Department of Health. They say if you're immunocompromised, you should get your third dose 28 days after your second dose of Pfizer or Moderna. The FDA has not recommended additional doses of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. Maryland's Secretary of Health says they support the third dose. You can check the CDC's website to see if you're eligible. No word on when those doses will be available to immunocompromised Marylanders. The CDC updated its vaccination guidelines yesterday to recommend third doses for people who have significantly compromised immune systems. Florida's governor is sticking to his mask mandate ban despite opposition from certain local officials and even President Joe Biden.
Governors in at least seven states have some kind of order keeping school districts from coming up with their own mask mandates, including Florida. A pro-mask protest took place there in St. Johns County, just south of Jacksonville, during a heated school board meeting. Here's Florida Governor Ron DeSantis.
Our view is you shouldn't have government forcing kindergartners to wear masks for 8 hours a day. That should be a decision for the parent.
DeSantis has said that the salaries of school leaders could be withheld if they don't comply with his order. Meantime, the Biden administration is looking at ways to pay Florida educators who defy the governor's rule.
Fox's Christina Coleman. Things are not looking good in Afghanistan as the Taliban offensive is expanding today, with fighting reported just 7 miles from Afghanistan's capital. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres.
Afghanistan is spinning out of control.
He's calling on the Taliban to stop the violence and negotiate in good faith with the Afghan government. U.S. troops are expected to be out of Afghanistan in less than 3 weeks. Metro has some more safety improvements to do.
The Washington Metro Rail Safety Commission says Metro Rail still needs to address systematic safety certification deficiencies. The oversight panel ordered by Congress says a recent audit found Metro's work on automated door operations and automatic train control took place without following Metro's own safety procedures. The commission also found that despite repeated communication with WMATA, Metro has failed to fully implement safety certification requirements. Barbara Britt, WMAL and WMAL.com.
If your travels this weekend involve I-66 in Northern Virginia, you may want to allow extra time for your trip.
There will be paving work this weekend on I-66 West between Gallows Road and Nutley Street. Michelle Holland with VDOT.
We will have that area reduced down to one lane only during nighttime hours. And then during the day on Saturday, there will only be 3 lanes open on the stretch of 66.
She says the lanes will all reopen by Sunday morning. This is part of the ongoing Transform 66 Outside the Beltway project, which will create express lanes in the center of the roadway. Maria Leaf on WMAL and WMAL.com.
WMAL Sports, the Nats fell to the Braves 4-2. Traffic and weather next. WMAL traffic. Here's Christine Eads in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
Good news on 95 southbound. The road work between Dale Boulevard and Dumfries Road has cleared, but you're still seeing some delays from Opitz Boulevard to get through what was the work zone. 95 southbound at Centerport Parkway. It's a vehicle fire that blocks the off-ramp to Centerport Parkway. You're jammed on 95 from the Garrisonville Aquia exit to get past that scene, but all your lanes on 95 are open. Just the off-ramp is blocked. On the BW Parkway, accident investigation has cleared. Northbound between 450 and 410, all your lanes are open. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Partly sunny to start off the weekend. Cold front will settle over the region later on this afternoon and evening. Scattered showers and storms will be likely, but not nearly as hot. Temperatures today around the 90-degree mark. Yes, still hot, but nothing like the past several days. Showers and storms, best chance to the south later on today. Overnight, becoming mostly to partly cloudy. Lows back in the 60s in the suburbs, around 70 degrees downtown for your Sunday. Partly sunny skies, much cooler. High temperatures only in the lower 80s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
I'm Heather Curtis on 105.9 FM, Washington's Mall, WMAL.
Now, from the WMAL WinBet Studios, the Saturday morning update.
It's hour two of the Saturday morning update. I'm Rick Fowler. John Gizzi joins us. He is the White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com and Newsmax TV. John, good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
Afghanistan, major story at the White House this week. Let's talk about how this reflects on the Biden administration, the Biden foreign policy, and the Biden legacy.
Well, essentially, it's a black eye for the Biden administration. In having such a rapid exodus of U.S. forces from Afghanistan, down to the point where a new surge of American forces will go back to Kabul to oversee the withdrawal of the Americans who remain there, as well as Afghanis who helped the United States, it bringing back images of Saigon falling in 1975. America's longest war did come to an end. But when one looks back at the loss of American life, the wounds that were there, and sees it was for the Taliban returning to power, this is going to be a political issue that we have not heard the end of. People will ask, who lost Afghanistan, and they'll point their fingers at the Biden administration for making such a decision as to get out sooner rather than gradually. It is not going to be a pretty picture in Afghanistan. I'm sure the other guests will point out 17,000 to 20,000 Afghanis who helped the United States by interpreting for them are now in the danger zone at this point. Americans have to get them out or they face almost certain demise. I might add that in Vietnam, there were 110,000 South Vietnamese who assisted U.S. forces, and they managed to get them into Taiwan and other places. And so this is a mission that's an imperative for the United States right now.
John, there are reports that President Biden overruled the generals on the military strategy this week. What do we know about that?
Well, we know that sources within the Pentagon do leak. And they are saying that the generals, particularly the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the chairman, General Milley, all were telling the president he should not pull out so quickly and in such numbers. He overruled the general, saying America had been in Afghanistan too long and that he was pulling them out. In the end, of course, as we know, the military makes its position known. It can argue within the circles of government. But once the civilian authority, that is the commander-in-chief, says what the decision is going to be, they have to salute and follow or resign. And in this case, the generals did go along with the decision made by President Biden. What they said in private, what their dissent was, we'll find out when many of them leave and then are able to talk to the press or write memoirs. For now, this is a decision by the United States government, made by its president, with the Joint Chiefs saluting.
John, every day there's a story about the infrastructure package. It seems to be moving. But where is it at week's end?
It's headed for the House of Representatives, having passed the Senate by a vote of 50 to 49. Now, moderate Democrats are beginning to threaten a no vote on the measure. They realize the cost of it, that it will extend the national debt further, and that it was actually larger than the package laid out by the president when he approached Republican senators about it. $3.5 trillion is one of the largest figures we've heard during the debate on infrastructure. One thing should be noted. This is an odd year election year. There's elections coming up in two states for governor, as well as the possible recall of California's Democratic Governor Gavin Newsom. During the Republican National Committee meeting, economist Arthur Laffer, the father of the party's many growth initiatives and tax cuts, said that if Republicans focus their energies on Virginia and on California in the recall and are successful, it will give Democrats second thoughts about voting for this package. And he said that the two elections coming up are related to the package. We'll find out.
Governor Andrew Cuomo, under major pressure, resigns this week. What's next for the governor and what's next for the state of New York?
My sources in New York tell me that civil action still could be pending against the governor. In addition, the Eastern District of New York's U.S. attorney is looking at some action not only against the governor, but against people around him and his immediate staff. Some people have pointed a figure at Melissa DeRosa, the governor's chief of staff, who resigned the day before he did, a sign of things to come. As far as politics in the state, that's another story. Kathy Hochul becomes governor, the first woman governor of the Empire State, and the first governor from Buffalo since fellow Democrat Grover Cleveland in 1882. Now, does this mean that she'll lead the Democratic Party into the elections next year? Hardly. Letitia James, the Attorney General, well-connected to the progressive wing of the Democratic Party in Manhattan, has signaled that she is ready to run. One will recall that it was her 163-page report that spelled the downfall of Andrew Cuomo. On the Republican side, both the Republicans and the New York Conservative Party, that has line three on the statewide ballot, have settled on Congressman Lee Zeldin as their nominee. Now, New York has not elected a Republican governor in 20 years. It is hard to think of the state electing a Republican to anything statewide. But it should be noted also, Lee Zeldin gave up a safe congressional seat in Suffolk County, that he was previously a two-term state senator and a lieutenant colonel in the Army Reserve. People like that don't make decisions idly, and he obviously felt he could win under circumstances other than Andrew Cuomo being his opponent. One thing's for sure, the race to succeed Andrew Cuomo was going to be watched by the whole nation.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. As always, John, thank you very much.
Always a pleasure, and let's hope for rain over the weekend.
It is 7:16. It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. Up next, we'll talk to Dr. Bob Lahita about the Delta variant and other variants, as well as boosters. Stay with us. But first, off to the WMAL Traffic Center. Christine Eads is there this morning.
Accident investigation on the BW Parkway between 450 and 410 has cleared, so all your lanes are open and you're delay-free. On 95 in Virginia, southbound, construction is clear between Dale Boulevard and Dumfries Road, but you're still slow making your way through what was the work zone. Then continuing on 95 southbound at Centerport Parkway, we've got a vehicle fire there that has the off-ramp blocked. Your lanes of 95 are open, but you are jammed from before 610 Garrisonville Aquia exit to get past Centerport Parkway because everybody's stopping to take a look at that. But your off-ramp is blocked with crews on the scene. Doesn't affect the northbound lanes of 95. Those look great between Fredericksburg and the Springfield Interchange. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Partly sunny to start off the weekend. The cold front will settle over the region later on this afternoon and evening. Scattered showers and storms will be likely, but not nearly as hot. Temperatures today around the 90-degree mark. Yes, still hot, but nothing like the past several days. Showers and storms, best chance to the south later on today. Overnight, becoming mostly to partly cloudy. Lows back in the 60s in the suburbs, around 70 degrees downtown for your Sunday. Partly sunny skies, much cooler. High temperatures only in the lower 80s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
73 degrees, 717, the Saturday morning update on WMAL.
Monday, former Border Patrol honcho Mark Morgan plus Joe DeGeneva and Jillian Anderson, O'Connor and Company, 5 to 9 a.m. on WMAL.
The Saturday morning update continues, and the coronavirus continues to dominate the news. We're joined by Dr. Bob Lahita. He's director of St. Joseph's Institute for Autoimmune and Rheumatic Diseases, professor of medicine at Hackensack Meridian School of Medicine, and clinical professor of medicine at Rutgers, New Jersey Medical School. Dr. Lahita, thank you for being back with us on WMAL.
Thanks, Rick. Good to be with you.
There is so much spin in the media and in politics about the Delta variant. And if you could explain to us what the difference is between the Delta variant and the initial coronavirus infections, And how serious is the Delta variant?
Well, the prior coronavirus was called the Alpha variant. And it was the original. And that was fairly infectious. But there's a Beta, and there's a Gamma, and there's a Delta. And the Delta is largely from India, we believe. It basically right now is about 85% of the infections in this country, in our country. It is extremely infectious. It's about three times more infectious than the Alpha variant. Everything is compared to the Alpha variant. It also is highly transmissible, which means that you need less of a viral load to infect somebody else. So that segues into what you may ask me about wearing masks. But at any rate, at this point, it's a highly infectious and some of my colleagues say very, very much more deadly variant than the Alpha variant. It originally was thought to have great propensity for the lungs in particular. So, it, you know, we had most of the deaths last year were, not 2020, were related to pulmonary failure, and patients would become low on blood oxygen and eventually run out of gas. Some of them, many of them, died at home without even knowing that they were being low on oxygen. So it's important for patients that have symptoms where they feel like they're gasping for air to make sure they get themselves over to the hospital vis-a-vis 911 or have a relative drive them. But nevertheless, back to the Delta variant, seems to be a lot more infectious, a lot more pneumotropic, that could be the term used for the lung, and a lot more transmissible.
You mentioned masks. Let's take the politics out of that discussion and a common sense approach on masks, indoors, outdoors, travel.
Common sense thoughts on me regarding the fact that when you are now in a supermarket, when you are in a closed space, and when winter comes, it's even going to be more critical because we're going to be gathering together in warm places. If you're in a bar or you're in a stadium and you're clumped together, it's important to consider wearing masks. However, I am against wearing masks outdoors. I am much more likely to wear a mask indoors in, say, a church where I'm cheek to jowl with the two or three people next to me, and I have no idea whether these people in the church with me are vaccinated. The same thing may occur for a synagogue or a mosque or wherever you go where you have no idea. I think the prudent thing to do would be to wear a mask and make sure you have a little bit of the hand lotion or the disinfectant spray for your hands. And if you can, of course, keep your social distancing. And this is just a precautionary measure, but it is a smart thing to do in lieu of the Delta variant and in lieu of the fact that we are trusting other people on the honor system.
We've seen and heard the media coverage about breakthrough infections for those who are vaccinated. We've had a little bit of time now since it started. How serious are you finding these infections?
Well, I think these breakthrough infections are being hyped. And I mean that because if you're immunized, you are protected for all intents and purposes. If we look at data in patients that are 16 years of age and older, and this was actually done in a medical journal, I believe it might have been Lancet. They looked at 4,272 patients who were tested for the Delta virus. If they had one dose of the vaccines, the two-dose vaccines, their immunity wasn't great, but they had immunity. It was 30.7%. And once they got the two doses, they had 93.7% protection from the Alpha variant and 88% protection against the Delta variant. Now, I'm looking at a release, a press release that just came out about the J&J one-shot vaccine. And, you know, that's been looked at in South Africa in 500,000 healthcare workers. And they found that it was 95% effective against the patient dying and 71% against hospitalization after you had the J&J vaccine. So, yes, do we see breakthrough infections? Most certainly we do. Are they serious? Probably not if you've been vaccinated because you're fairly protected with regard to your immune system. You may get a fever. You may get sore joints and muscles. You may be laid up for a week in bed with upper respiratory symptoms, very, very bad, bad cold. And that should be it. Some patients vary and get GI complaints, nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea. But the vast majority of patients, as I said, are protected after two doses of either Moderna or Pfizer, or now I'm seeing from South Africa, one dose of the J&J vaccine.
Number of stories this week in the news about boosters. Recommendations that those with immune deficiencies should get a booster. Now, it's all evolving. The vaccines have not been around that long, so we don't have a lot of research on it. But what do we know about whether we'll all need booster shots?
Well, I think boosters are based on several things. One, the Israelis, you know, who immunize well over 80% of their population in a masterful way, but it's a small country and they have the wherewithal to do that. And they found that the boosters were 93% effective against the illness and hospitalization and 64% more effective from protecting patients from breakthrough infections. Now, you're absolutely right. The boosters are available and FDA approved, not CDC approved at this point, but FDA approved for use in immunosuppressed patients, those on cancer chemotherapy, those who have inbred errors of metabolism and have immunodeficiencies, which are largely genetically based, those who have things like HIV, bad HIV with a depletion of, say, T lymphocytes, those who are on certain drugs like rituximab, which eliminates most of your B cells, B being B lymphocytes. So those are the patients like the post-transplant cancer chemotherapy and those with severe autoimmune diseases who should be eligible for the booster shot, which is a third shot after the two-shot Moderna and Pfizer and after the J&J shot. And J&J is saying there's no need for a booster at all, after their 500,000 healthcare worker experiments in South Africa, they said there's no need for a booster. Now, the booster, Rick, has been accepted by Germany, by France, of course, Israel, and now in the U.S. So undoubtedly, there will be other countries who will be giving patients who are vaccinated boosters. President Biden, on the other hand, if I might just say this, mentioned in a press conference, I think it was last week, that he was going to give 116 million doses to 65 countries vis-a-vis COVAX, which is the international collection of vaccines distributed to countries that have very low vaccination rates. And I think someone in Congress, and they may be listening, said, why should we be taking boosters when we have 76 million Americans who haven't even gotten their first shot yet? And I think that is a point. I'll leave that one to you.
Another debate in politics and in the media and on social media is the whole question of vaccinations. Many people have not gotten vaccinations. Let's take the politics out of it, the pressure out of it, the shaming by celebrities. And what is your medical recommendation at this point as to whether somebody who is unvaccinated should go ahead and get the vaccine?
My medical recommendation is very, very simple. The vaccine doesn't hurt. It's a needle in your arm. Regardless of the fact that it's still emergency use authorization, there have been 1.6 billion people around the world who have been vaccinated. And we have almost, I guess it's about 165 or maybe more millions of people from our country who have been vaccinated, many of them receiving both shots. And it is extremely safe. And the real world data show that patients do not wind up in our ICUs on a ventilator. They may get sick if there's a breakthrough infection, but you know what? You're not going to die. You just may get sick. It may be like a slight case of the flu or a bad cold. I know many of my patients and some of my friends who have had breakthrough infections, and they have survived. So I would recommend, and I don't think people should wait. I think once you wait, you wind up in the hospital. It's a little too late then. Get your vaccine now. It's very safe. It's painless. And if you do have a side effect, it simply means your immune system is doing the right thing. It is acting up, and it's protecting you. I mean, I expect the immune system in most people to be fairly silent, but in a lot of people, it may not be, and it may cause a fever. It may cause some exhaustion and tiredness for a couple of days, but that's okay. Just take it easy. Take a nap. Go to bed. You know, enjoy yourself. Drink a lot of fluids. and you'll get through it. But when you get through it, just think you're protected. You're not going to die.
There's another variant that's been discussed in the media, the Lambda variant. They say it could be very serious. What do we know about it?
Well, the Lambda variant is out of Peru. It has been in a lot of South America, and it is currently in California. The Lambda variant may be more infectious and resistant to vaccines than the original Alpha COVID variant. It hasn't been compared to the Delta variant at this time. But, you know, with the lack of vaccination and the 76 million people that have not taken the needle or the jab, as they call it, this is why these variants occur. There would not be this many variants if we could control our population and reach what is so-called herd immunity, which may never be reached, actually. But I would love to see the vast majority of vaccinated. And so the Lambda variant, known as C37, was first reported in Peru a year ago, and it's now spread across South America. And I think it's a matter of weeks before it's up here in our country, and it may replace the Delta variant as our next big threat. I know that people are tired of hearing about variants, but you know what? If you get immunized and the herd gets protected, these variants are going to go away, and we're not going to see them again.
Dr. Bob Lahida, director of St. Joseph's Institute for Autoimmune and Rheumatic Diseases. Thank you very much for being with us, doctor.
Thank you, Rick.
729, Saturday Morning Update, WMAL. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer and KT McFarland on the way.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. America's reopening. Hear it here. 105.9 FM, WMAL. A Cumulus station. News now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. The situation in Afghanistan's getting more dire as the Taliban offensive continues. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres says the Taliban's creating a humanitarian disaster.
Hospitals are overflowing. Food and medical supplies are dwindling. Roads, bridges, schools, clinics, and other critical infrastructure are being destroyed.
He's calling on the Taliban to stop the violence and negotiate in good faith with the Afghan government. Virginia is not wasting any time getting third doses of the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines to immunocompromised residents. Hours after the CDC recommended boosters for those people, Virginia's Department of Health said they will start getting them out as soon as today. Maryland's health secretary says he fully supports the CDC's decision. No word on when they'll be giving immunocompromised residents boosters. Illegal immigrants continue to cross over the border in large numbers. Customs and Border Protection agents encountered more than 212,000 people attempting to illegally cross the U.S.-Mexico border in July. Tennessee Republican Senator Bill Hagerty tells Fox Business Network the Biden administration's mishandling migrant immigration.
They have absolutely destroyed our national security at the southern border, created a crisis. They're fueling the cartels and the coyotes, too. They're just providing more and more messaging for them.
The Biden administration blames the surge of migrants and asylum seekers at the U.S.-Mexico border on the Trump administration. WMAL Sports, the Nats fell to the Braves. Traffic and weather next. WMAL Traffic, here's Christine Eads in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
Taking a look at 95 in Virginia, we did have a work zone southbound between Dale Boulevard and Dumfries Road. It has cleared, so all your lanes are open, but you're dealing with some slow traffic from Dale City to the Quantico Triangle exit with lanes open. Vehicle fire on 95 southbound at Center Park Parkway has the off-ramp block. Your lanes of 95 are open, but very heavy delays from the 610 Garrison Villa Quiet exit to make your way past that scene. Once you do, continuing towards Fredericksburg, you're going to find you're moving back up at speed. It's not affecting anything on the northbound side. All your lanes are open, and you're moving at speed past the incident. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Well, the cold front continues to slide through the region today. We'll have the chance for some afternoon showers and storms, mainly to the south of D.C. Could have some heavy rainfall as well, so I have to watch out for that. Highs today, not nearly as hot, but still pretty warm, around 90 degrees. Later on tonight, showers will come to an end, mostly cloudy to partly cloudy, some patches of fog possible, lows in the 60s to near 70 degrees. Heading towards your Sunday, partly sunny to mostly cloudy, stray showers to the south, high temperatures much cooler in the lower 80s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
I'm Heather Curtis on WMAL.
7:37, it is the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer joins us. He is the president of the London Center for Policy Research, the author of Operation Dark Heart. Tony, great to have you with us.
Hey, Rick. Always good to join you.
Tony, the headlines coming out of Afghanistan this morning, tragic. CNN on the Chiron early this morning, they talked about, quote, fears of humanitarian disaster as Taliban gains ground. Let's look at the military side of it as well. And the whole situation here, the tactical mistakes of the Biden administration, how could this happen?
So let's put it in perspective of what was planned versus what has played out. The Trump administration, through the Mike Pompeo-led negotiations, had come to a withdrawal date of 1 May, where they had worked to put together a tapestry of agreements with the Afghan government, the Taliban, warlords, and other strongmen. You know, you've got people there who, you know, do their own thing, and then the tribes. The idea was to have this internal sharing of power that would allow the Afghan people to move forward. Rick, the moment President Biden decided, I'm going to go my own way and do what I want, that all went into disarray. When he announced he was going to essentially put this all off to the 11th of September, all those internal elements, the warlords, the tribal leaders said, if you're not going to follow through, all bets are off. And they basically gave permission to all their fighters to go support the Taliban. So that's what you've seen. Right now is fighting season, and that's what they're doing. They're fighting, and they're all fighting for the Taliban. That's why you've seen Herat, Kandahar, other cities fall rapidly. So what essentially happened, once that agreement was gone, Katie barred the door, all those forces, which were otherwise not going to be on the field of battle, were put on the field of battle, and you've seen these things fall one after the other. That's what you're seeing. And the reason the Pentagon was caught so far off guard on this is because they did intend to maintain some level of offensive capability to try to do a condition-based full withdrawal, trying to help support the process going in place. Again, when Biden said, everybody's out, no support, that piece went out the window as well. So but the bottom line is, this is all at the feet of Joe Biden, because the best-laid plans of the previous administration to bring us out and allow for a peaceful, negotiated transition fell apart the moment Joe Biden said, I don't want to go along with any of them, and here we are.
Okay. Now, as we move forward, we see the Afghanistan forces seem to be just basically giving up in many of
areas.
Is it a stretch to say that if they didn't see the continuing support of some sort from the Americans, that they're going, I don't know that I want to get slaughtered since I don't have any backup. I don't have those jets sitting over at Bagram Air Force Base to come assist.
Yeah, Rick, the Afghan National Army was always a fiction. Their attrition rates were constantly something that indicated to us that it was never going to sustain itself. And then again, the moment that we invested $88 billion in building this thing, and in a week it's gone. The other thing we knew early on is that we had a number of incidents of green-on-blue violence where we had Taliban members in the Afghan army. We knew this. And so this idea that somehow this force was going to be that thing that held together the Afghan government was insane. And what seen play out is what we figured would play out, that there would be nothing there as a cohesive element to hold it together. And I heard John Kirby talking about this yesterday. This structure, that. No, I don't know what these people were thinking. And so what we've seen now is essentially all these great military weapons, everything we gave them has now been dispersed out to the elements of the warlords, tribal leaders, and Taliban. There is no central government. Now, what you see left essentially is what's in Kabul. And that all is probably going to collapse in very, very short order.
Well, let's talk about the spread throughout the country. The Taliban has taken over 10 capitals now. They've most recently taken Kandahar, which was a big one. You mentioned Kabul and the timing. And what might that timing look like?
So you're going to see essentially a reestablishment of what the Taliban believes is their law of the land, Sharia. It's going to be very severe. We're talking about very severe treatment of a number of groups, to include women. I know State Department's already moaning about the fact that all these women's rights they've tried to establish over the past 20 years is going to go away. It is what it is. The other thing we can expect, essentially, is a level of infighting to start right after this happens. And I'm going to go on the record here. I know everybody's saying, oh, Kabul's going to fall over the next few days. I almost think they're going to hold off and try to do it on or about the 9/11 anniversary just to make that point. And the other thing to remember here, the only controlling elements in the region beyond us has been Pakistan and China. Pakistan's going to sit back and try to play its cards to its advantage. They are no fans of the Taliban based on some of the things that happened in Pakistan over the past 20 years. But more importantly, pay attention to China. China has two copper mines, and they've already said they're going to recognize the Taliban government of Afghanistan. And I think there's a reason for that, twofold, economic and political. This is a chance for the Chinese to rub our nose into a failure, much like we did with the Soviets during the Cold War. So it's going to be a very interesting next few weeks.
Gee, I heard from the administration that Russia and China were not going to recognize the Taliban. Huh.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. What about the future threat to America? If we lose Afghanistan, does it become a possible haven for terrorists?
It does, but I don't think it's as realistic as people are making it out to be. I think the Taliban did learn a lesson, as did the Pakistanis, to allow for other terrorist groups to exist there. And plus, ISIS is no friend of theirs. There's been conflicts between the Taliban and ISIS from day one. So I think the Taliban is a lot more reluctant to engage in serving as a safe haven. With that said, we should have maintained Bagram as an offensive forward post for both intelligence collection, as well as offensive operations. That was one of those things, Rick, that the military, the Pentagon, did recommend that we maintain. As a matter of fact, I recommended this in my book, Operation Darkheart, that we maintain some level of offensive capability to do counterterrorism operations. Again, that was something vetoed by Joe Biden, so that we basically have no ability to launch internal or near Pakistan operations rapidly to respond to threats.
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, he is also the co-host of the Thought to Action podcast at LondonCenter.org. What's going on this week on the podcast?
So we got Dr. Steve Hatfield, one of our senior fellows, a virologist, a real virologist, Rick, is going to talk a little bit more about China and some of the issues regarding something called COVID. So I hope everybody will check it out.
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, thank you very much.
Thank you.
7:45 Saturday morning update on WMAL. KT McFarland is next, but first we're off to the WMAL Traffic Center, and Christine Eads is there this morning.
Accident in Landover on the inner loop of the Beltway before 202 Landover Road takes away the center lane, so you're going to be jammed up before 50 to make your way past the accident scene. Crews are responding to the scene there. We do have construction on the outer loop of the Beltway between Richie Marble Road and Central Avenue causing delays where your two left lanes are closed. In Virginia on 95 southbound at Centerport Parkway, vehicle fire has the off-ramp blocked. Your lanes of 95 are open, but you're going to be jammed from the 610 Garrisonville Quiet exit to make your way past the scene. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Partly sunny to start off the weekend. Cold front will settle over the region later on this afternoon and evening. Scattered showers and storms will be likely, but not nearly as hot. Temperatures today around the 90-degree mark. Yes, still hot, but nothing like the past several days. Showers and storms, best chance to the south later on today. Overnight, becoming mostly to partly cloudy. Lows back in the 60s in the suburbs, around 70 degrees downtown for your Sunday. Partly sunny skies, much cooler. High temperatures only in the lower 80s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
73 degrees in the nation's capital, 7:46 Saturday morning update. 7:49, it's the Saturday morning update. I'm Rick Fowler. We are joined each week by KT McFarland. She was the first Deputy National Security Advisor in the Trump administration, and she is the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. KT, good morning.
Good morning, and it's a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. KT has authored an opinion piece at foxnews.com, the headline on it, Afghanistan was always mission impossible. Biden's living in fantasy land with this end game. KT, what we're hearing from the president, the Pentagon spokesman, the State Department spokesman, is contradicted by what we're seeing and hearing in the news every day.
Yeah, I think that this is stunning. to think that the media has become so corrupted that it is not reporting and not holding the Biden administration to account over this. This is Saigon. This is Biden's Saigon, and it's worse than the original Saigon. I was in the White House Situation Room in April 1975 as a young aide to Henry Kissinger, and I watched what happened in Saigon as the United States was forced to evacuate civilians, military personnel, and then the Vietnamese who had helped us as translators, et cetera. And it was just a great tragedy. And it affected American standing in the world, American foreign policy for a generation. And now President Biden, I mean, look, it was always going to be a Taliban takeover eventually because we would have gotten tired and the Taliban knew it. I mean, I remember 15 years ago being in Afghanistan and a tribal leader sort of tapping on his empty wrist and saying, oh, you Americans, you've got all the watches, but we've got all the time. You will eventually get tired of us and you will leave and then we'll take over. All we have to do is wait you out. And that's exactly what's happened. What didn't have to happen was the fantasy that the Biden administration has been living in of saying just, what, 72 hours ago, well, we're going to have a diplomatic solution here. And then 48 hours ago saying, well, maybe the Taliban is moving in. Gee, maybe the country falls in a couple of months. To now today, where it's probably going to be a couple of days before you see a Taliban flag flying over Afghanistan's capital. And it's a tragedy that didn't have to happen. We're going to end up shooting our way out with the 3,000 combat forces that he's put in to try to get Americans evacuated. We should have been evacuating all along, which is what we started doing in the Trump administration. And now he's going to be faced with a situation where by pleading with the Taliban, please don't do anything bad to our people in the embassy. He's just an open invitation for hostage taking. It's a great tragedy.
Well, he'd been 40 years in the Senate. I mean, he was in the Senate in 75, I believe, when we saw Saigon. I mean, I would think that he, with that experience, would have a better handle on this. It's mind-boggling to me.
Yeah, and the lessons that we learned in Vietnam, and which I then took those lessons, I remember, as I said, being in the Situation Room that night and in tears sort of vowing to myself, never again should America be in this position of a war in a place that we can't win, not where our vital interests are not at stake, and in a war that we're sacrificing our men and women in. And fast forward to today, we've learned those. We haven't learned any of those lessons. We're making the same mistakes that we did before. Nation building a modern democratic state in Afghanistan, that is not in our vital national interest. Yes, it was a vital national interest to kill al-Qaeda, but we had done that by December of 2001. In 3 months, we got them out of Afghanistan, and the remainder of them had gone into Pakistan. We should have gone into Pakistan and finished off the last 200 al-Qaeda, including Osama bin Laden, and we could have done that in December of 2001, and yet we didn't.
You alluded to weakness, and what happens when we have this message out to our adversaries, basically of the weakness we've seen in this administration?
What's going to happen now is that the Chinese are standing by to give diplomatic recognition to the Taliban government of Afghanistan. They will press, that will mean other countries in the region, they're going to follow China's lead. They'll recognize the Taliban government. I assume the Taliban government is going to come to New York and sit at the United Nations General Assembly in the fall. And it will be the ultimate humiliation, which the Chinese will use to their advantage. They'll say, see, what better proof do you have that America is a nation in inevitable decline? They couldn't even beat a guerrilla army in Afghanistan after 20 years of effort and $1 trillion and blood and treasure of the American people. They're on their way out. China's on their way on the up. All of you countries who think you're still allied with America, don't you dare, because you better cut your deal with us while you can. And I think it'll be an enormous public relations advantage to the Chinese, a disaster for us, because yeah, it's a cardinal rule in foreign policy, in life, I guess, but certainly in foreign policy, that if your adversaries and competitors sense weakness, they then go in. Then they say, well, this is my time. I'm going to get what I can. I'm going to get what I want. I'm going to push them around. So expect to see the Chinese, the Russians, the North Koreans, the Iranians, even the Taliban pushing us around. And it'll be very difficult for America then to do what it needs to do in the 21st century, which is to craft an Asian alliance with the key countries of Asia to stand up to China.
And would there be the potential of danger to Americans, including hostage taking?
Oh, I think absolutely. I mean, once the Biden administration pleaded with the Taliban, please don't take America, you know, let us evacuate. Please don't hurt Americans at the embassy, or you're standing in the world. What did the White House press secretary say? She said, well, the Taliban won't do it because they care about their standing in the world. What, but does she really think that the Taliban are sitting around watching CNN in English on their flat screen TVs? Has she been to Afghanistan? You know, they don't care what the world thinks of them. And so the notion that somehow they're going to be persuaded to be humanitarian, it's just not going to happen. It's an invitation for a hostage taking, and it will not be lost on the world that this was Joe Biden's Saigon, that he, like Jimmy Carter before him, and he's shaping up to be more and more like Jimmy Carter every single day. The passivity in foreign policy, the fecklessness, the inability to see ahead of what's happening in the world, and the living being there means home, the economy, the high unemployment, the flatlined economic growth, all of those problems. He's Jimmy Carter on steroids. And you know what happened after Jimmy Carter's presidency? Ronald Reagan came in, and we didn't hear from the loony left for a generation. So I predict the same thing will happen in 2024, although there'll be much more mopping up to have to do after the Biden presidency than there was even after the Carter presidency.
KT McFarland, we refer you to her opinion piece at foxnews.com. Afghanistan was always mission impossible. Biden's living in fantasy land with this endgame. KT, always great to have you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
KT McFarland, author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. 7:57, Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. Saturday Morning Update, Garden Sense, follows the news next at 8 o'clock right here on WMAL.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. America's reopening. Hear it here. 105.9 FM, WMAL. A Cumulus station.